Hello and welcome to episode 233 of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. I am your co-host, Mark Blankenship, and with me today, well, I'm actually closer to Broadway than she is, but we're still there together spiritually. Sarah D. Bunting, hello.
Hello.
And Sarah, you have picked today's tune. What have you chosen?
I have selected George Benson's On Broadway. I really was struggling with which of George Benson's charting hits to pick. But in the end, you know, this podcast is what it is. You are who you are. I am who I am. And what I am is someone who has like a stated sort of like black letter law, quote, loathing of musicals, but who also has seen All That Jazz in the theater more than once because I love it. And I also love George Benson's On Broadway for a lot of reasons. This is a pretty long clip, but wrestling it down to even close to a minute, like there is terrain in this song. We're going to talk about it, but here's a little bit from earlier in the song On Broadway. And you ain't had enough to be the glitter rubs right off and you're nowhere. Oh, look who's coming at us with a key change. I'm ready. This song, this is such a good fucking song. First of all, it's like over 5 minutes long. I sometimes forget that there's this whole part towards the end where there's like even another key change and a bunch of like piano and scatting, which are two things that I should be like, ew, no. But the song has done such a good job in the opening minute and a half or 2 minutes of giving you this like aural montage projected into like the sort of visual, your visual imagination of all the beautiful, shitty, beautifully shitty parts of Broadway that mean that we love that genre and the theater and that actual geographical area of New York City, like it's a family member that ate paint as a child. Like you could just picture like all these sweaty dancers falling out of line on Thursday morning rehearsal. There's a lighting gal in her patchwork skirt up on a ladder, like screaming at somebody. There's ghost lights. There's people on fire escapes smoking and rehearsing. It's All That Jazz. It's a chorus line. It's being in the back of a cab with no air conditioning in the middle of July. And the vocal is intense. He is feeling every single part of this story, which is about a guy who's like, I'm going to play for Broadway shows, but I haven't eaten anything except a saltine I found at the corner of 48th and 8th Avenue 2 days ago.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my dream fulfilled. And if I survive long enough to reach that day.
Yeah. If I haven't, you know, waste it like I'm cutting new notches in my belt. But it's such a like fantastic, inviting, ambitious, mysterious opening rhythm line that is deceptively simple. But like it starts and you hear crowd noise, which is such a smart thing to put in it, that it's like, oh yeah, we're all going to do this together. Like you all in this room know this story intimately.
Yes. And it's it also really, good. the crowd noise in this song is such a wonderful irony, considering it's a song about someone who doesn't have an audience.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. That it's like, where is this crowd in at the Abingdon, where you paid, like you rented the room so that you would have an audience, and now you can't afford some soup.
So you've heard.
Yeah. So I've heard. Like, a chock full of nuts is right there, but unless you find a dollar on the ground, no soup for you. Are you on the corner? Are you, like, down the street from the Naked Cowboy? Where, like, how is this happening? And when this came out in the late 70s, like, to even want to go to Broadway, literally or figuratively, is like, fucking strap it on, everybody. Because toothless junkies are going to try to bite your shit. By which I mean actually try to bite you.
So this song was written by two genius songwriting teams working together. Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil and Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller.
So that's the crowd then?
Yeah, I guess them. So. I guess it's just all of the songwriters.
Just them
clapping.
Chatting while he does his take? Okay, got it.
And then I actually had forgotten that in 1963, the Drifters had a top 10 hit with this song.
Oh, shit. I forgot that too.
Yeah, they reached number 9 in 1963, but in the same way that Gladys Knight and the Pips had a hit version of I Heard It Through the Grapevine before Marvin Gaye, it doesn't matter now.
No.
Because George Benson's version is the version of this song. It's the one I think of. And when you see the musical Smokey Joe's Cafe, which is a jukebox musical of the songs of Lieber and Stoller, let me assure you that the man who sings this song in that show will be doing the George Benson version.
Yeah, sure. Why wouldn't you?
I am so glad in the clip that you pulled that we get to hear the way he sings the blues, because God. That's one of the greatest vocal interpretation moments of the 70s, if you ask me.
There is a novella just in there that it's like he has the blues, but he is also sort of like, but he's referring to the blues as a genre. He's enjoying, not all that secretly, his ability to get so much blues into the word blues.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this irony that, like, you know, I have the blues because I'm doing all of this with the word blues and nobody is hearing it. It is the narrator's take. But then, like, how many fucking people have heard this song over the course of their lives because it was titled on Broadway. So it's absolutely going to be one of those songs like Time of Your Life that it's like, this song is never going to be far from anyone's ears ever again.
Well, if ever there is a group of college students with a final performance to do in their musical theater program, this song shall live.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, and I don't know how much you know about George Benson as a person. I didn't really know that much until preparing for this episode, but are you aware of his biography at all?
Not really.
So, in a happy and unusual turn of events, George Benson seems like he's just been okay for his whole life.
I was going to say, I know he, like, did he die this morning? Because I thought he was okay.
He's been married to the same woman since 1962.
Damn.
They lived at least for a while in Englewood, New Jersey.
Aww.
He had a really successful career as a jazz guitarist before he ever even got famous as a singer. He was a sideman. The fact that he is good enough as a guitarist to be a somewhat of a legend in the jazz guitar circles, as I understand it, uh-huh. But who can also sing like this, mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
And my favorite fun fact, he recorded the original version of The Greatest Love of All.
Huh.
Because that song was written for a Muhammad Ali movie called The Greatest.
That's right.
A fictional film in which Muhammad Ali plays himself, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that when George Benson eventually released a Greatest Hits album, he called it The Greatest Hits of All.
And he did have a bunch. Like, this was someone who, in the early 80s, was like, he was in your ear holes a lot. Like, it wasn't necessarily trouncing them all big and small with number ones, but, like, there he was on, like, if you go to the top 100 for 1982, he's on there several times. And one, yeah. At least one of the songs had been annoying us for most of the prior year so. But then I was like, should I, like, is this one of those guys where we want to talk about the 80s hit in terms of like the evolution from the 70s and like who were the people that managed to escape the 70s, and like we keep meaning to talk about the Who's Eminence Front, but then we never do because it's a terrible song and it's annoying, but it's also the best exemplar of this phenomenon. But in the end, I came back to like, why wouldn't we just talk about On Broadway? And if it weren't as good as it is, I think it would still be as ubiquitous as it is, probably. And he, as an artist of stature in various genres for a while before this was recorded, had no reason to make it as good as it is.
Right.
But he
didn't
did.
Have to try that. He could have Rod Stewarted it. He didn't have to try this hard.
Yeah. And I think it's also, maybe I just have this in mind because we were talking last time about Lenny Kravitz and about black men and rock guitarists and the sort of danger brand that goes with that. But there is something that speaks to me about that lyric, because I can, you know, because I can play this here guitar, and that feeling maybe that a musician of color is not going to get the chances on the Broadway of the 60s and 70s, or maybe even today. I don't know how Broadway is doing with trying to be more diverse, but you know.
I will say that right now, as we record this, there are a record number of plays written by black authors that will premiere in the next Broadway season. So there are steps being made.
Right.
Which is nice.
Right. But I think that that's still, I think there's still that resonance of like, you know, everyone, I think the dream of coming to Broadway sort of has the same shapes for everyone, but where you slot into that dream in reality is not, there aren't as many shapes available for artists of color, or there weren't. Right. So there's that.
Well, certainly in the 70s. Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. But I mean, here we are again at a song that is immediately appealing, well-crafted, well-performed, but there is still that darkness to it. Like, I can't not weave in my chair. I can't not sing along. There is, you know, footage of me singing along to this, which I will probably cut out for the safety of everybody. But I mean, like, it's really an achievement, and it gets a lot in there. And every time it ends, I'm like, I can listen to that again. And then like 20 minutes later, I'm just still listening to it.
As I was preparing for this episode, it occurred to me, this is a song that's dark, yet was also in the Sweat Into the Oldies video.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so fascinating, though, that, like, it's two, like, Hall of Fame songwriting pairs. Like, that should have resulted in a just dog's breakfast. But it didn't. Right. Like, everything about it that's extra, like, there are multiple key changes. It's long. There's crowd noise. In some versions of it, there's, like, taxis honking. You're like, okay. But it works somehow.
Yeah.
You'd think it would just be, like, you know, this Winchester house of a composition that it's like, all right, everybody, we'll record it, but don't expect anything.
Right.
But it works.
And the lyrics of this song are also really good.
Yeah.
Really can picture the story of the narrator in this song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who are wondering about some of George Benson's other hits, I would recommend the following. Sarah, feel free to add to this list.
Okay.
Along with On Broadway, in 1976, he won a Grammy for Record of the Year for a great song called This Masquerade. In 1980... I think this might have been one of the songs that you were referencing. He has the discotastic, just give me the night.
Banning. Yeah, that one you're like, I want to hate that because it was just everywhere. But that's another one where it's like, clever title. Like, that's going to get played. That's gonna get you over the New Year's Eve hump and into the next year's chart. Good job.
And there are other hits that he had, but those are the three that I feel like are the key George Benson hits.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Well, greatest hits of all, Whitney Houston, you missed your opportunity.
You sure did. Well, I'm delighted to hear that George Benson, despite being a noted craftsman, is like fine.
Yeah. The sadness stayed in the music and didn't leech over into his life, which is a happy and rare thing.
Yeah. It's like when whatever Godfather is on TV and you're like, fucking whatever happened to John Cazette? Oh.
Right. Oh.
Like, why doesn't he do more stuff? Well, that'd be a neat trick if he did. But every now and then it's nice that like somebody is extremely good at this pop culture job and is not also like immolating in front of us, or did in 1978. So good job, Mr. Benson, and we'll see you on the flip.
You got me down. You got me down. Can't afford to wait another day. And I'm not about to give it all away again. Not for anyone.
Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship. That's me. And Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. I also edit the podcast, which is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at bleav.com.
To learn more about us, submit song requests, get a pop chart reading, or buy a Mastis book, visit our website at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. You'll also find all of our social media links there, too.
That's Mark and Sarah, with an H, talkaboutsongs.com. And for even more content and access to the Mastass Happy Hour, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/mastass.
Thanks for listening.
Mark.